Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar, broadcasting from my home studio. We'll be talking about the challenges facing Pennsylvanians paying their mortgages and rent and landlords coming up in just a few minutes. But up front, Governor Tom Wolf yesterday imposed new restrictions on bars, restaurants, and businesses as the coronavirus surges in some places in Pennsylvania. We are joined now by Spotlight PA's Angela Columbus, who covered this story yesterday. Angela, thanks for joining us today, especially in such short notice.
Thank you for having me.
So, what are some of the highlights of the new restrictions that the governor ordered yesterday?
Well, we can start with restaurants and bars. Now, these establishments, if they serve food, will only be able to seat people indoors up to 25% of their capacity. That's a further rollback of where things were even after we entered the green phase, because currently seating at those types of establishments is only allowed up to 50% of their capacity. And when you go to one of these places, you will have to sit at a table. You can't sit at a bar. And patrons will only be able to order alcohol if they're also ordering food. And if you're basically, that means if you're a bar that doesn't serve food, you can only now serve alcohol to go, like the cocktails to go that the governor allowed a couple months ago. But you cannot offer in-person service. And if you do have outdoor dining areas, those can still operate under the current restrictions, which are require social distancing and masks if you cannot be further from apart than 6 feet from other people.
What about some other places where people have been gathering, like gyms, theaters, yeah, concerts, things like that?
Well, it's tricky. So gyms and fitness facilities, they are allowed to remain open, and they have to follow the current restrictions involving wearing masks and also providing for social distancing. Indoor gatherings, there's a special section in the governor's order for indoor gatherings and events. Those are now limited to no more than 25 people. So if you are going to a movie theater and you're going into an individual theater hall, no more than 25 people will be allowed in there, even if within the entire complex there are more than that. Those are really pretty strict provisions for places and businesses. And also businesses that can allow their employees to telework are now required to do so. And that's another change that we saw in the governor's order.
Yeah, when you say that, I'm curious about that one, because you know there have been so many people who have been teleworking anyway. What difference is there now with the governor's order?
Before it was guidance, now it's required. But you know, this has been the issue with some of the governor's orders going back to the very beginning of the pandemic. You know, what are the repercussions if you don't do it? Part of the order does specify that businesses that do not follow the restrictions, they could be fined or they could be closed. But there's really no specific plan that has been laid out for enforcement of these new restrictions.
Yeah, and just to clarify, that's for everything, including the bars, the restaurants, the businesses that they said there could be fines and all that. But so far, that hasn't happened, has it?
There have been warnings, and there have been, for other orders, a few citations, but for the most part, it has been law enforcement trying to talk to businesses first and trying to get them to follow the guidance in case they didn't understand it or they thought they were somehow exempt. There haven't really been very harsh penalties for businesses or people who have not followed the orders from the governor.
So what is Governor Wolf's reasoning for imposing these new old restrictions?
Right. So yesterday there was a lot, when he announced this, there was a lot of talk about how there they are worried that because there have been spikes in certain parts of the state in coronavirus cases, that that could turn into something far more alarming, particularly as people travel for summer vacations, and including to hot spots now down south where coronavirus cases are really, really spiking. And he also said that part of the reason why we're seeing some of these spikes is because there are people who are not following the mask wearing requirement and are going out to public places and unknowingly contracting and also spreading the virus. So what he really wants to do is decrease cases enough so that schools can reopen for in-person instruction safely in the fall. And that was kind of the theme that we heard quite a bit throughout yesterday's announcement, that this is really about keeping cases down, keeping in Pennsylvania so that schools can safely return to normal or some version of normal in the fall.
The governor did say yesterday that he would not hesitate to keep schools from opening if the cases continue to spike. Is that accurate?
Yes, he did say that. He has also, though, through his Department of Education, given local school districts a lot of say in making determinations about what works best for them and for their local population. But if the governor could impose, like he did back in late March, a statewide shutdown of all schools.
Angela, in your story, you mentioned that the reaction to the governor's orders yesterday was pretty swift. You talked to a few people representing businesses across the state. What did you hear?
A couple of things. First off, they believe that really limiting restaurants to 25% of their seating indoors is almost like shutting them down. It's almost not worth it for them to remain open and pay all of these various expenses that they have to pay if they're not going to be able to really make any money off of indoor dining. There's also another train of thought there that instead of doing this, instead of imposing these really strict rules, why don't you instead go after establishments that have been a problem? And we have heard anecdotally of those types of establishments that are not enforcing the rules. And that's what they're saying. And short of that, they say if you're going to be putting these restrictions in place, really there should be some sort of bailout of the hospitality industry, which has really taken a big hit during the pandemic.
Bailout meaning some relief, monetary relief from the state.
Correct, from the state.
Another reaction I heard, and this came from the Pennsylvania Chamber of Business and Industry, is, why impose these restrictions over the entire state when there are several places where the cases are spiking more than in other places in the state? Southwestern Pennsylvania, for example. I know there are some places in Delaware County, for example, that are also spiking. Did the governor address that at all?
He did. He didn't address it particularly directly, but I think what he is saying is that because we're at a point in the season where people are traveling and going from one place to another, that it can quickly become a problem outside of these hot spots that we've seen in the southwestern part of the state and the southeastern part of the state. So that really was his rationale, but that has been what you just talked about has really underscored a far larger debate between the governor and the legislature about giving localities, counties, more power and say in making public health decisions for people within their borders. And that's really at the heart of the dispute about the governor's approach to handling the pandemic.
Spotlight PA's Angela Columbus. Angela, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And you can read Angela's coverage of the governor's press conference and announcement at papost.org or go to WITF.org to read more about that as well. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. The COVID-19 pandemic devastated the economy and many families' finances. One of the biggest worries for those who lost their jobs or had their salaries cut was paying their mortgage or rent. In Pennsylvania, Governor Tom Wolf issued a moratorium on foreclosures and evictions at the beginning of the pandemic. Actually, it was in May, and extended it until August 31st. That date looms large for those who still aren't back to work and may be having a hard time affording monthly expenses. Meanwhile, landlords and property owners say they're being hit hard, too. In this portion of the program, we're going to be talking about those who are trying to pay their mortgages and pay their rent. Joining us, Lori Toya, director of the Homeowners Emergency Mortgage Assistance Program, and Bryce Moretzky, director of strategic planning and policy, both with the Pennsylvania Housing Finance Agency. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. I'll get this out, 7532. Bryce Moretzky, if you could, kind of give us the big picture here. Describe the situation across the state. Are there many people who are in trouble or having trouble paying their rents or mortgages?
Yes, Scott. There are thousands of people that have been impacted from COVID-19 coronavirus over the past few months. And when the governor signed Act 20, what became Act 24 of 2020, he allocated $175 million to the Pennsylvania Housing Finance Agency to help both renters and mortgage and borrowers stay in their homes. We know that being in a safe home, an affordable home, is one of the most critical factors to remaining healthy. And so those funds have been incredibly helpful. $150 million of that $175 million goes to rental assistance, and the other $25 million is targeted for borrowers who are delayed or delinquent on their mortgage payments. And so, yes, the income has taken a huge toll, especially on those sort of most vulnerable in our society and in the Commonwealth, whose wages have been cut, they've lost their job, they've had to leave the workforce to take care of family and lost significant income and haven't been able to pay their rent or their mortgage.
Do we have any numbers, any idea of, you know, how many people? You said thousands. I know it's hard to nail this down, but maybe you can talk about, like, who or how many people have applied for these funds.
Yeah, we can certainly talk about, I mean, we don't know sort of ultimately what the overall impact is. We know just in the first week, both programs began getting their applications for, began coming in for the mortgage assistance and the rental assistance programs on July 6th. And just in the first week on the rental assistance side, there were over 1,600 applications across, and there is an organization in every county that is taking applications for the rental assistance piece, and PHFA is taking applications for the mortgage assistance piece. And we received hundreds of applications, and there are, in fact, thousands more sort of in the queue on the mortgage assistance side as well. So we know that the demand is, and there's lots and lots of need out there. We think the assistance will be able to help. The $150 million ultimately should be able to help more than 30,000 individuals and probably greater than 4,000 homeowners stay in their homes ultimately. And so our job at PHFA is to get the money out and to get the word out about the availability of these funds. We need people who are behind on their rent, behind on their mortgage, have lost income or their jobs to apply.
Lori Toya, what about on the mortgage side? I mean, from what Bryce just described there, there's much more money available to renters than there are for those who are paying mortgages each month. What have you seen on the mortgage side as far as people applying and in need of that money?
Yeah, it's the demand is high. We've got about 3,800 applications that were started. That just means the people created an account to do the online process. Of those that were started, we've actually gotten 600 online, and we've gotten about 140 applications by mail. So I'm sure many of those that started are going to be completing that, and we just expect it to continue.
You know, the renting side has gotten so much attention. I mean, when we talk about this, and I say we, I think members of the media especially, we first hear about evictions. But what about those who their homes may be foreclosed on? I mean, we're talking $25 million, but still, it's a lot less than what Bryce had mentioned with renters. Are renters in more danger of being evicted than mortgage payers are of losing their homes, of being foreclosed upon?
Well, Pennsylvania does have the Homeowners Emergency Mortgage Assistance Program as well that's been in existence since 1983. So people that are delinquent get a notice from their lender, an Act 91 notice that tells them about the program. It's a foreclosure notice, but it tells them about the program and how to apply. So that is available as well. At this point, depending on the volume, it's going to be a funding issue, but we're hoping to help as many as we can through the PMAP program to use up that $25 million.
So, Bryce, is this explain how this works with,
yes.
I mean, does this pay for 100% of rent for 1 month or a percentage for several months or just how?
Yeah. So the way it works is that a renter who's on a lease is a tenant in an apartment can request up to $750 a month of assistance for a maximum of 6 months. So a total of $4,500 is available on the rental assistance side. And on the mortgage assistance side, it's $1,000 per mortgage for 6 months. And we can help up to two mortgages. So up to $12,000 on the mortgage assistance side. On the rental assistance side, you, again, have to either be unemployed or have had a reduction after March 1st of greater than 30% of your income. There are applications available at the phfa.org website, and you then fill out those applications. It's a three sort of part application. The landlord and the tenant have to be part of that application process, and you submit it to your county of residency. And your application is then reviewed, and assistance is provided if you are eligible for it. We know on the rental side, people who rent tend to be of lower incomes. Their income is more, they're more at risk of potentially losing their, being evicted if they fall behind by only 1 month. And so they're much more vulnerable, I think, on the rental side. And so that's why I think there's probably a greater focus on the $150 million available for the rental assistance.
And I think that that makes sense in a lot of people's minds. You know, I'm just trying to picture this, though, that, you know, we've heard that there are so many people since this pandemic started who are seeking food assistance, for example. Life has changed. It's so abnormal compared to what it was before the middle of March. It sounds as if we have a lot of people out there who are having to make decisions, tough decisions, between paying rent, paying their mortgage, buying food for their family. Now they might have their children at home, keeping gas in the car. Maybe they don't have to travel to work. Maybe they've had to upgrade their computer because they've or their internet because of working or teleworking from home. it just seems like there are a lot of decisions that are being made right now. Anecdotally, have you heard these things?
Yes. All of those things are everyday decisions that renters and homeowners are facing. Do I pay the electricity bill this month, or do I pay my mortgage? Do I buy food, or do I pay my rent this month? These are incredibly difficult decisions that people are being faced with on a day-to-day basis. And again, we hope that this $750 a month on the rental side and the $1,000 a month on the mortgage assistance side will help a little bit. We'll take a little bit of that pressure off of people who are facing those kind of most drastic sort of decisions, life and death decisions. We don't want to see more people end up homeless. We know what the impacts are of that. And so really the goal here is to help, mitigate and forestall a worse scenario related to the impact of corona.
Has the homeless population grown? Have more people become homeless since this began back in March?
We have seen, I don't have numbers in front of me on that issue, but we have seen lots of shelters that have had to put in place a lot of health, have had to move people into hotels and other situations to do social distancing. If the pandemic hits a shelter, it can rapidly move through a shelter. And again, so we have seen more people, the shelter system have to address, and there have been resources provided through the federal CARES money to help that system address some of those emergency shelter needs. But we do anticipate, as the moratorium potentially comes off in August, and evictions might begin again, and assistance ends, there could in fact be a spike in homelessness.
We have an email here from a listener who says, our Latino and immigrant communities have been disproportionately affected by COVID, and many of them are not eligible for this assistance program. What can people without social security numbers, such as many immigrants who faithfully pay their taxes, do to apply for rental mortgage assistance? As of now, they cannot apply. Also, why did information or application materials take so long to be released in Spanish? Are they going to be available in other languages?
Yes, we apologize for not having the material available immediately when the programs opened on July 6th in Spanish. They are now available as of Sunday night. They were available in Spanish on our website at www.phfa.org. And again, we apologize for that. The applications, certainly anybody can apply for the program. We don't ask any specific questions about immigration status, so we would encourage everybody to apply.
And so they wouldn't have to have a Social Security number or anything like that?
They would have to have, they could either have an identification number or a Social Security number if they are, if they have been unemployed, because we have to do a verification with the Department of Labor and Industry on unemployment. But if they can, there's also another provision. If they've lost more than 30% of their income, they can prove that through wage stubs, back bank statements, or other ways, they are also still eligible, and that does not require a Social Security number.
One of the things that we've heard, again, anecdotally, is that there are landlords and tenants who have been working together, banks and mortgage payers working together. Is that widespread? And Lori, I'll start with you on the mortgage banking side. Have banks been open to, we're in the middle of a pandemic and a lot of people have lost their jobs and maybe have, I don't know if I'd say forgiveness, but maybe move some things around?
Yeah, we've actually had a lot of talk about that topic because a lot of homeowners entered into a forbearance plan with their lender. And under the mortgage side, the mortgage payments have to be, well, both sides, but the mortgage payments have to be at least 30 days delinquent. And if you're in a forbearance agreement, those payments aren't considered delinquent. So there are people that have worked out a forbearance plan with their lender, and it's preventing them from getting this grant. But there are, we've seen a lot of lenders that are working with people.
If, and I don't know whether banks have agreed to do this, mortgage lenders have agreed to do this, of allowing a payee to skip a month or something like that. That money's all kind of going to come due someday, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so how about the...
I would think in most cases, yes.
Bryce, what about on the rental side? Landlords, I mean, because later in the program, we're going to be talking to Pennsylvania Apartments Association, and, even though, again, anecdotally, we've heard stories of working together, tenants and landlords are starting to make the case that, hey, we're being hit by this too.
Yeah. Yeah. And that we have heard that as well, that, you know, the $750 is not enough. In many places, rents twice that or even more. And, you know, people are 2, 3, 4 months behind. And landlords have said, we're just not interested in participating. We're hoping that, again, that we can encourage landlords to work with their tenants to apply for these funds, at least get these funds, right? That's at least, you know, $4,500, or $750 a month. At least it's something to help offset the losses that the landlords, property owners have experienced. And we understand that. That's an real economic loss for them. But again, we're hoping that these funds will help, and that they will understand some of the situations that these renters are really in and the day-to-day difficult decisions they're having to face. Once the program ends, we hope that landlords and tenants might be able to enter repayment agreements where they could spread out the back rent over a period of time so it's not a burden, and that landlords see this because they have if the tenant leaves, then they have to find another tenant. They have to spend money to, clean the unit and those kinds of things. So we're hoping that the existing tenant really is sort of seen as somebody that they should be working with. So we're hoping that landlords and the Landlord Association will be willing to participate with the renters on the program.
Okay, now maybe I'm being naive here, but I don't think so. I would imagine that most landlords have not increased rent. I mean, is there a rent freeze right now?
There is not. There's nothing that – there's no rent freeze. No. I mean,
officially.
Landlord again could – not officially. Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, again, that's a decision that – individual landlords and property owners have to make when the lease for a tenant comes due. There's no official freeze on rent increases, no.
I would think, and I will ask this question of the Apartment Association as well, that there may be landlords that once this is over, or at least we return to some form of normalcy, when that will be, I don't know, but that may raise their rent to try to recoup what they lost.
That's a risk. Yeah, absolutely. Yes, I think that is probably a concern. And again, I think this speaks to the larger issue in Pennsylvania and across the country of, we have an affordable housing issue that we have to address. We need more affordable housing. We need rent, longer term rental assistance. We really have a housing crisis that we have to all deal with. And that, I think, is the bigger issue here. And that's not, the pandemic, we will come through this. We have lots of resources available, help get us through this. We hope that landlords and renters and mortgage holders and borrowers all work together to help people get through this. But the real issue here is we have a housing crisis.
And will that housing crisis get worse as a result of this?
I'm afraid so. I think it's going to lay bare the inequities in our housing markets, and that those that are least able to afford owning a home, staying in a home, renting an apartment, finding an apartment are even going to be further impacted. Those disparities and inequities, I think, are going to come out even more as we get through this and look back at the information.
We have an email here from a listener. I'm just going to have you respond to this. Governor Wolf has decided to penalize those who plan ahead and reward those who do not plan. This listener says foreclosures don't take place because you miss one payment, meaning COVID is not the issue. Two, with rentals, tenants living month to month, again, COVID is not the issue. I'll have both of you respond to that. Lori, what about I guess this is listener Michael who says this, that you're rewarding those who are not planning ahead.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the guidance that was passed to us had the 30-day delinquency requirement in there, and it does create a problem. I fully understand that.
Mm-hmm. Bryce, what about that? Is planning ahead?
It does seem a little bit. That's the way the legislation was crafted, and so we were trying to work with it within those confines. But you're right. Somebody who made the very difficult decision of paying their rent and not paying some other bill is probably not going to be eligible for the program. And that's, I think it speaks to the bigger issue of we need to really be thinking more broadly about housing affordability and availability.
And then you're gambling when you don't pay the rent and you pay for other things, you're gambling that you'll be able to get some of this money or some kind of assistance to stay in your home.
Right.
That's true.
And, that's right.
Thomas says, I'm a landlord in Lancaster City. I own various investment properties. All of my properties are leased through the Housing Choice Program, Section 8. Have any of these tenants in distress applied for Section 8 housing? All of my tenants are up to date and some carry a credit.
I don't know. I mean, we know there are in many communities there are waiting lists for Section 8 vouchers, Housing Choice vouchers. In many, many communities, there is long waiting lists for those vouchers. And so I don't know the specifics to reply in terms of where how it might impact this going forward. But again, there are waiting lists in many, many places, and thousands of families have gone onto those waiting lists to try and get that additional resource. Yes, it's a very good way of helping people.
Lori, I don't know how you can address this, but a listener says that we're missing the point. The banks are the actors in this collectively human situation who are not being held accountable. They are a powerful force who can make things right, which the news media is avoiding. Have banks, talk about the role of banks in this. I mean, ultimately, that's where mortgage money is going to go, whether it's banks or a mortgage lender or something like that.
Right. Yeah, one thing I can mention is that lenders have an option of applying for the PMAP grant on behalf of their customers, their mortgagors. I don't have an updated stat, but early on, maybe after the first week or so, there were only three, I believe, that came in from an actual lender. But for them to apply, they would need to have cooperation from the homeowner to get the information. If they apply online, it's a process. They have to upload the documentation for the income loss, the layoff, whatever the situation was. But, we hope that they work with them. We really, that's really out of our hands, unfortunately.
Well, we're almost at the end of this portion, and I want to thank both of you for being with us today. And I will say that there is a lot of information on your website, the Pennsylvania Housing Finance Agency, not just about housing, rent, mortgages, but a lot of coronavirus help is available there, too. What is that website, Bryce?
So our website is www.phfa.org, and the telephone number is 855-827-3466. And right on our front page is a PA Cares, a red banner, and you can click on that for the rental or mortgage assistance applications and information. Every county has an organization that's helping us with the rental assistance piece, and we have all those organizations listed on our website. So please, we have a call center. We have over 30 staff taking calls every day. So please reach out and let us try and help you and see what we can do.
Bryce Moretzky is Director of Strategic Planning and Policy. Lori Toya is Director of the Homeowners Emergency Mortgage Assistance Program with the Pennsylvania Housing Finance Agency. Thank both of you for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Scott.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Coming up tomorrow morning at 9, Smart Talk will not be on WITF on the air tomorrow morning. We return Monday morning. Tomorrow morning at 9, it's episode 2 of the 4-part series, The Refuge. If you got to hear last week's episode, interesting program, reporting from Kaktovik, Alaska. It's the only town within the boundaries of this refuge, in an area that has a lot more to lose and more to gain than any other community in the country. If you want to find out what I'm talking about, tune in tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. On Monday, Smart Talk, there's a new push to expand broadband internet in Pennsylvania as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Now we're going to hear from those who own the properties that haven't been getting the rent money, or at least the full amount of rents that they normally would get each month. Joining us is Marlon Orlando, CEO, and Leah Selhammer, Vice President of Government Affairs with the Pennsylvania Apartment Association. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Scott.
If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Marta, give me an idea. I asked our guest in the last portion about the big picture around the state. As far as from the property owner point of view, the landlord point of view, what's it look like across the state right now?
Well, first, we should probably clarify, the Pennsylvania Apartment Association, we represent owners and management companies that tend to have multiple companies, the larger apartment owners across the
right,
state.
Right.
From our perspective, I think most of our owners will say that things are not as bad as they would have anticipated given the situation that the country and the state is in. For the most part, rents are coming in better than we would have expected, and folks are working together. You'll see property owners working with their renters to work out plans and flexibility that will help them stay in their apartment. So most of the folks that we have talked to, things are going better than they expected.
Why is that? I mean, what did they expect, and why are they better than expected?
Well, it could be just the nature of the types of properties that they have. So, for instance, we know that we tend to classify properties into A, B, and C class. So we know that the A class are your higher end properties, C class tend to be more workforce housing. So I think some of it is the nature of the type of properties they own and who's living in those properties and how they're impacted by COVID and the unemployment that's affecting so many. I think another reason is that, the unemployment that's been coming in has been helping, and people are doing the best to manage their finances and making sure their rent gets paid, and where they can, working out options with their management companies.
Leah, from a government point of view, I mean, we just had a discussion about the emergency funding that is available to renters across the state. Is the state doing enough? I mean, it sounds as if, you know, from what Marlin just described, that things are better than expected. But has this government assistance been enough? Has it been very helpful?
Yes, what we're finding is that a lot of our owners have decided not to participate in the program.
Oh, really?
Given the fact that there was some new regulations that came out from the Pennsylvania Housing Finance Agency. However, what we explained to them was the $750 cap for some of our owners is not going to be enough. The other problem that we're experiencing is, because most of our renters have been able to pay their rent up until this point, they are not eligible to apply for the program because they're not 30 days in arrears. And that's really challenging for us because we are hearing from some of our residents and tenants that they are very concerned about the $600 a week ending at the end of July or their unemployment compensation ending at some point and then them not being able to pay their rent because they're going to have to choose between paying their rent or feeding themselves or getting the medications that they need. So we're very sensitive to that fact, and we've been working with members of the legislature as well as PHSA to make some changes to that program so that it would be more attractive to our members and that it is more suitable for residents who may be facing hardship in the next coming months. And we're hopeful that the legislature will reconsider some of that and make the changes that we've requested.
You know, we have heard, again, anecdotes that there have been landlords working with tenants. Now, you represent some larger property owners. Is that occurring even amongst your members, that they are working with the tenants if they are having problems paying their rent?
Yes, and we're very fortunate that our owners have a lot of compassion and they are encouraged to work with their residents. We've been talking about that from the very beginning. We believe that landlords across the state and across the Commonwealth are working with their residents regardless. You know, whether there are members or they're smaller landlords, we believe that everyone wants to work with their residents. And the reason is because going through the eviction process is not only time-consuming, but it's also very expensive. So for our members, it usually is a last resort. And right now with the eviction moratorium, it is a bit challenging for us because the governor issued an order which allows for our owners to evict for reasons other than non-payment, so health and safety reasons. Unfortunately for us, the courts are interpreting the order differently across the Commonwealth. Some municipalities are allowing us to evict for reasons of health and safety, and other municipalities are not. So we're challenged with that a bit, but we do know that our owners are working with their residents. And as long as people who have the ability to pay their rent keep paying their rent, we have the ability to work with those who are truly facing hardship.
Give me an example of health and safety reasons. What do you mean?
Well, we've heard from some of our owners that, you know, that they could be in a situation where there are two individuals on a lease and there could be a situation with domestic violence. Law enforcement can be involved, but that person isn't necessarily going to stay in custody. And as a result, they're allowed to go back to that apartment, but we cannot evict. I actually heard from a mother of a woman who is facing that challenge right now.
Wow. Well, that again, that's not COVID-related, but you would think
Correct.
That there would be things taken into circumstances taken into consideration there. And I don't know whether... I'll ask this question anyway because I think it pertains more to individual landlords than group property owners and companies. What if you have a tenant that has not paid the rent and refuses to take calls and doesn't return calls? I mean, does this order? I mean, there has to be some cooperation either way. But what about a circumstance like that?
We have a lot of circumstances like that. In fact, we heard from one of our management companies who does third-party management across the Commonwealth, and third-party management is that there are owners of certain complexes, and then there's a management company who manages those complexes for that owner.
And I believe it was one of our complexes in the Lancaster area where their monthly income is normally around $63,000. Well, they're already in arrears $63,000 just for that complex, which means that owner at some point may have to shut that complex down. So now we're facing a whole new issue with homelessness and people being displaced. So we have a lot of concerns with that, just primarily because, you know, we're not sure where this is going to go. And we know that some of our residents, not all of them, but some residents know that they cannot be evicted at this time. And as a result, some of them are taking advantage of that.
Marlon, and, you know, just what Leah described there, and I've heard people say this, that they don't have a whole lot of sympathy right now for landlords or property owners because, okay, they just heard Leah say $63,000 a month in income. What do you say to them? Because, and again, now you represent multiple companies and not individual landlords, but there are some that this is their business. This is what they do. This is how they, this is their living. This is what they do. What do you say to someone who says, listen, I don't have a whole lot of sympathy for you. You're making money.
That is definitely a sentiment that's out there, and it's what we hear sometimes repeated in the news media as well. First of all, many of our apartment owners, our members, are family-owned businesses. These were businesses that were started by their grandparents, their fathers, their mothers, and they are family-owned businesses with, you know, a team of people that are working very hard to make a living. So just like anybody, they're doing their jobs. They care about their residents, and they aren't all trillionaires. They're not all millionaire people. A lot of them are small owners. A lot of them are small operators that, you know, they're living, working as hard as they can. So I think landlords do get a bad rap. Just using the term landlord has a negative connotation to it. So we try really hard in our industry to show the good work that our property owners do. They very much understand they're providing people's homes, and they take that responsibility very, very seriously.
Mm-hmm. You know, one
and
of
Scott,
the things-
this is Leah. I would just like to add, too, that when we talk about the amount of money that comes in, mm-hmm. we also have to consider the expenses. Like Marlon mentioned, you know, these are family businesses and the expenses that are associated with these buildings. So, for example, during the stay-at-home order, we saw our utility rates go up. We had more issues with maintenance because people were home. Obviously, now with COVID, we are spending a lot more money on cleaning services, making sure that our properties are safe for all of our residents. And consider the fact that we also have our mortgages. So we pay our mortgages, we pay our employees, which a number of our owners are major employers in each of the areas that they serve. So we have to pay our employees, we have to pay our insurances. And it turns out that on every dollar of rent, right. the owner themselves is really only taking home about 9 cents. So we're talking big dollars, but we're also talking big expenses.
Well, something you mentioned there, we only have about a minute or so left. Health and safety responsibilities in the context of coronavirus. Are there new health and safety responsibilities that property owners have?
Yes the governor issued several orders. Oh, go ahead, Marlon.
I'm sorry. I couldn't tell. Yes. We, from the very beginning, we've been working with our property owners to make sure that they are following the orders and the guidelines from the CDC, the state, and the local guidelines as well, which include everything from how to manage your office operations to safely showing units to potential renters, guidance for maintenance repairs in units, being able to operate those common areas and amenities safely, and all the protocols that go into proper disinfecting high-touch common areas. And anytime there's a reported COVID case, oftentimes bringing in outsourced resource companies to thoroughly clean and disinfect areas. So there's been a lot of safety guidelines our folks have been following that we've been able to help guide them through.
Hey, I want to thank both of you for being with us today. Marlon Orlando is CEO, and Leah Selhammer is Vice President of Government Affairs with the Pennsylvania Apartment Association. Thank both of you for being with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Scott.
Coming up on tomorrow at 9, we will, no Smart Talk, but The Refuge, Part 2, tomorrow morning at 9. Smart Talk returns Monday morning. We'll be talking about, coming up on Monday morning, we're going to be talking about expanding new efforts to expand broadband internet throughout Pennsylvania. Very important for many Pennsylvania businesses and schools, especially with the COVID-19 stay-at-home orders and not knowing what's going to happen with the opening of school. That's coming up Monday morning.